Good evening and welcome to a wine tasting review, which I've been looking forward to for quite some time because I've been meaning to review this particular bottle of wine for most of this year. The reason being that it was the first bottle of wine that I purchased from a shop in 2026, and it's part of a previous review that I did called four wines for under £7 or something like that, and I'm going to link this one back into that one because I didn't have this one at the time when I did that particular article. So I'm not saying go out and buy supermarket wines. What I'm saying is, if money is tight or for some reason you just want a cheap alternative, it's not a bad thing to have a few quick go-to wines up your sleeve. And this particular one can be purchased in big Tesco's, but also those shed size Tesco's, you know, that you get all over the place that are open until 11 o'clock. And that is worth knowing. I paid £5.30, but you're probably going to pay £5.70 or more than that from a shed Tesco's, okay? But for the convenience, it might just not really matter, right? So I think, and I could be wrong, but we're just about to find out, I think this is the best Côte de Rhône available in Britain, in just, you know, well, anywhere really in Britain at the moment, at £5.30. Now, the last one that I've reviewed, and I'll just try it again in a bit, was the Boulard Côte de Rhône, which I got from a tiny, you know, we're not even talking shed, it's more of a hut, local Morrison's, and that was £7.25, which is very, very cheap when you're out in the middle of absolutely nowhere and there's just a go-to hut for wine. All right, but when I was in Ashford this evening, I was just able to pop in and get this Côte de Rhône Palais Saint Vigny, product of France. Well, that's always good to know. 13.5%. And the other one was 13.5%. So for a couple of cheap and cheerful rounds, you know, pretty impressive, really. I mean, cheap and cheerful, you know, we're talking £5 here. This Côte de Rhône is a fruity and medium-bodied red with rich flavours of red and black cherries and a spicy finish so typical of the Rhône Valley wines, perfect to enjoy with grilled meats, sausages or ratatouille. The thing is that once you've got onto the Côte de Rhône village and you realise, you know, something about what a village is, it offers a very concentrated and intense terroir. You begin to be a little bit snobby about ordinary everyday Côte de Rhône, and probably for a good reason, because an awful lot of it is, you know, not much better than Ribena. But I think this one's going to be pleasingly okay, and I also think the other one, with a couple of evenings in the bottle, what's left of it, will also live up to my recommendation. So it's a big challenge to recommend a cheap wine, right? Because most of it is garbage, it's wine lake. You know, what I'm noticing about this one, the other one was a screw cap, this one is a plastic cork. So let me just get inside of this plastic cork and see if I can leverage this out. I'm just using a waiter's friend style, oops, wine corkscrew. I know that there's lots of fancy stuff on the market these days where you just sort of suck and blow and it comes out in one go, but I do prefer these. They just fit into your pocket nicely, and I just take the very top of the capsule off and then good to go. Right, so I've got my truncated and my round bottomed Dartington crystal glasses here. So I'm going to see what kind of nose, what kind of palate. So I'm getting a very, very bright raspberry, cranberry look. So for first glance, it seems to be pretty thin bodied, but it is 13.5%, remember. So, it's incredibly good. I can't see my fingers through the glass. It's just the angle regards, you know, the electric light and how it looks above and below, or indeed to the side. It's pretty good. Okay, so here's the nose, and then I'm going to try the other one and see what we're getting, okay? And then I'm going to say what I think about the two of them and whether they're both as good as one another, one's better, what they're going to do with food, what I'm going to be eating and drinking them with, and so on. Right, so in the Merlot Masterclass round bottom glass, and always try your wines in two quite different shaped glasses, because, and when I say glass, I mean crystal. Okay, not that cheap stuff you get from the charity shop. The stuff that looks as though you can see through it, but is in fact just made of concrete and brick dust. So the nose on this one is, it's pretty alcoholic. There's a lot of sort of pepper spice punch going up my nose. It tastes like, I mean, it doesn't taste, sorry, I haven't tasted it yet. It smells very pungently of wet, slightly damp, well, they would be slightly damp, wouldn't they, if they're wet. I mean, slight damp mould socks, which is always so nice in a wine. Now, you're going to go off it immediately, but I'm just saying what I think, okay? And none of these things are bad. I mean, in a South African wine, we could have Cape Buffalo Poo, you know, but here we've got damp old socks. It's different, but they're different countries, you know. A lot of South African wine does, in fact, model itself on both the Rhone and Bordeaux. It's just that France doesn't tend to give us Cape Buffalo Poo. You know, that doesn't mean it's good, bad or indifferent. It's just different. Now, this one, compared to the dynamite hit of the last one, is, it's big and fruity, it's strong, it's alcoholic, it's got a definite punch to it, but it hasn't got that massive explosion in the mouth that everyone had. This is much subtler, right? This is much more of a tweed compared to your plastic yellow anorak. And it's got a satin smoothness to it, right? But it's got, you know, the confidence of a wine that just doesn't need to shout too much. When you've got guests for a dinner party, it is pretty exciting to open the wines and taste the wine with your guests sometime before food comes to the table. Although it's always a good thing to have some tortilla chips, say. I know there's saltiness on them, but a good wine, red wines anyway, should be able to withstand the saltiness of crisps. You could just have crackers, you know, but just having a chance to, you know, display a variety of bottles so your guests get a choice, ideally. I mean, there's no, let's say you've got a venison casserole, there's no one wine in the whole world that's just designed to go with venison casserole. Most red wines will work in some way or other, but quite a lot of them won't that well, you know. But what I'm saying is, ideally for a dinner party, have a variety, have an Italian, have a Spanish, have a Rhone, have a Bordeaux. You're going to have people who like all sorts of different wines, have an Australian, you know, or any other New World wine. I think for a dinner party, you want your guests to feel embraced and comfortable. You know, you don't want them to feel that they're out on, what's that thing called? The plank, you know, the plank on a pirate ship, and they're sort of being prodded towards the water. Go on, you bastard, jump! You know, you don't really want them to have that on the edge feel. You want them to feel comfortably and happily challenged so that, you know, their preconceptions of wine can curl up and be comfortably expanded. You know, they think, I really love really cheap Australian Shiraz, and here's a really expensive Australian Shiraz, and I think I'm going to enjoy myself. That's a, you know, when I put wines out, I very seldom have guests, but when I put wines out, I like to sort of suggest you're going to have a really good evening, and they're thinking, wow, look at this, I'm going to have a really good evening. Because, you know, if you're a bit shabby and cheapskate on the wines, they're wondering whether they're going to get bones in the fish pie or the pheasant casserole or whatever it is. I mean, heavens if they get a bone in a venison casserole, you know, but they're going to be on edge a bit, aren't they? Being prodded down that plank. So there's no harm in going for a cheap Cote de Rhone, so long as you know what you're doing. Now, let's get into the other glass. This is the truncated glass. This one was £5 and the other one was £25. But I don't always think that the wine tastes five times better in the more expensive glass. It's just purely about my personal pleasure as a wine connoisseur. So, nose. The nose is a flat tire. In other words, I'm really not getting anything out of it at all. And it appears to be going nowhere. And let's have a good old, you know, shifty on the palate. What I'm noticing about this wine particularly, it's just room temperature, you know, which is probably, I've got no idea, I'm just guessing, but, you know, 70 degrees maybe. This wine feels very warm, and it's probably psychosomatic. It's not any warmer than any of the wines I've had this year, but it's a very warming wine, okay? And it has such a subtle satin softness compared to the last one, which was just sheer dynamite exploding in a Welsh coal mine. So it's quite incredible how different these two very basic Cote de Rhones are. And the reason why I like Cote de Rhone is that it's almost always a blend of Grenache and Syrah. So in the Syrah, you've got your spicy black pepper. And in the Grenache, you've got all the big cherry, raspberry, you know, cranberry fruitiness with a bit of zest in there. And you really are guaranteed one heck of a mouthful. You know, I mean, it's going to please pretty much anyone. And it would be interesting if you've got a group of wine buffs just to try them out on a Cote de Rhone and see if they immediately say, oh, this is Cote de Rhone, because, you know, even having no idea what it is, they should be able to immediately say this is Cote de Rhone, because Cote de Rhone is not only Cote de Rhone, but everyone else in the world tries to emulate Cote de Rhone with their Syrahs and their Grenache, and sometimes a GSM, so you've got Grenache, Syrah and Mourvèdre. Mourvèdre also comes out as Mataro in Australia, it's good to know. A Monastrell in Spain, and Syrah is Shiraz. Grenache can be called Garnacha. They're just the powerhouse of incredible red blends. And if you can get a bit of Carignan in there as well, GSCM, you're really laughing all the way to the dinner table, you know. Right, so I'm just going to give you a quick idea of what this particular wine would be good with, and then I'm going to try out the one from last time and make some notes here. Remember that we're talking £5.30 and £7.25, and I had a hunch they would be worth the money, Right. So when you are buying cheap wines, it's probably because you haven't got much money. So the marginal utility of the value of the wine goes up extraordinarily because when you've got plenty of money, you don't care whether you paid 30 or 40 pounds for a Bordeaux. It really doesn't matter if it smashes on its face because, hey, it was just 30 or 40 pounds. But if you've only got 8 quid to spend and you've picked a pretty awful wine, you're stuck with it, aren't you? So you want a wine that you can, feel, this is going to be difficult, feel fulsome about. Feel fulsome. Yeah. So what do I think this wine would go well with? And I mean, this is anyone's midweek wine. Didn't have to be a dinner party. I mean, really advisably, it shouldn't be a dinner party. But let's just see if we could nudge it in as a dinner party wine. So I've been to a dinner party where the wine of choice, the only wine available, was Sicilian Rosso from Tesco's 4 quid a bottle. And it was pheasant casserole with Bramley apple and Greek yogurt to follow and crisps to start with. And it worked absolutely brilliantly. That was a £4 wine from Tesco's. There was loads of it. You could glug what you wanted, no problem. And problema, sostenuto, ma non troppo, and vivace. It worked. It worked really, really well. And I'll always remember that, with no disparagement about anything apart from perhaps the coffee afterwards. But that was excellent. It just took rather a long time, because the person making it has no idea how to make coffee. But nice try, you know. I mean, the thing is that I always feel my reputation stands and falls by the wines that I recommend. And that probably isn't true, but I like to feel that because I want to get to the truth of the matter. And the truth of the matter is, everyone has a different palate, and most people have no palate whatsoever. And if you tell them that it's a very expensive, very good wine, they'll believe you. And if they didn't see the bottle, and if they did see the bottle and they don't know anything about wine labels, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't believe you. So I think this one would be absolutely brilliant with beef brisket, bacon, eggs, and mushrooms. Any of your casseroles, and it probably would work with fish and chips. Definitely would work with sausage and chips. Don't eat sausages if you can avoid it. They're really bad, right? I mean, burgers at a barbecue, brilliant. Just don't go to barbecues that have burgers, would be my preference. But, if you do. There we are, and it would be absolutely magical with tiramisu, which is just as well because I've just bought some tiramisu. One of my students, not a wine student because he's only about 12 or 13, but a piano student today, we were discussing tiramisu, and he said, when you go out, because they do often go out, and you order tiramisu and it turns up and it's just nothing like you really want it to be. And I said, well, I've got a favorite one, I'm going to go and buy it, and it's really alcoholic and you can eat as much of it as you like, you can eat the whole lot and then feel really, really sick afterwards. So I said, which I think is money well spent. And he was full of admiration for my attitude there. Not that, of course, he's going to appreciate the alcoholicness at his age, but I feel that he probably will do later on, in life. And it's as well to be prepared, isn't it? So, yeah, this will go with most of your stuff. I mean, this is a brilliant sausage wine and, any kind of bolognese, you absolutely lap it up. But don't think that it's all about cheap. I think this would go really nicely, just as well I do, because I've got this as well, with a hog roast. With sage stuffing and apple sauce. Excellent. Yeah. So, I personally think, I mean, it does depend on the occasion, but really and honestly, if a red wine, no matter how cheap it is, if it's worth its salt as a social gathering, you know, dinner party setting, if it's worth its salt, I mean, it just doesn't have salt in it, but you can add salt by having tortilla chips, you know, while you're chatting and all that. If it's worth the salt and it's tortilla chips accompaniment, it will work at a dinner party. It doesn't matter how much money each person, you know, accumulates every year. A wine that's worth it will work. And I actually think this one would work. You know, now you want me to have a dinner party, don't you? And throw some really decent wines into the mix and this one. And the point is, every wine has a price point and also a convenience point. I mean, it's all very well me liking a very rare, you know, Portuguese blend. But if I can't get my hands on it, it's just so much will-o'-the-wisp imagination. Whereas this one, I can just go and buy, so it's got high convenience value. I mean, if you're not sure, bring the wines in, you know, in a decanter or whatever. So just say vaguely, this is a Rhone, you know, pass it around a little bit so people can see whether that's their chosen one for the evening, or just get people's, you know, because they're going to assume you've spent tons of money anyway. I mean, you know, they're looking at your chandeliers and your magnificent Chinese Ming on the mantelpiece and all that sort of thing. And so they're naturally going to assume you spent a lot. So they won't know this was £5.30. And it would be very, very interesting to see what each person says. And the fact of the matter is that if a wine's any good at all, at its price point, it's just as good as any other wine is good at all at its price point. And remember, at £5.30, there's almost no money in there left whatsoever to pay for the wine. So at £5.30, is this Côte de Rhône as good in its own way as a Vaccarat at £30? And I would say, yes, it is. And quite possibly, if it's one of those evenings where you want to glug, and it's absolutely perfect, because Vaccarat is the one wine from the Rhone which you just cannot glug. You know, it's almost the blood clot of the wine world, if that isn't too indecent of me. Vaccarat, I mean, not this one. This one's just the easy flowing river of blood, that type of thing, you know. So I'm just going to gulp, glug or slug what I've poured into this one. Then I'm going to try the other one, okay? But yeah, now I think this would be marvellous with tiramisu, but also vanilla ice cream and cheesecake, blackcurrant cheesecake, chocolate cheesecake at a push, and that New York cheesecake, which is actually just the stuff your grandmother made, but they call it New York these days to make you think that you've gone, you know, viral or something. Well, we won't talk about viral, will we? Because everyone's getting anxious about the new virus, which apparently isn't one that your computer, you know. I mean, when did we last have a vax for your computer virus? Is my question, but I don't want to get medical tonight. If you do have a headache, by the way, the two things which will sort it out are a good brisk walk, because it likes oxygen, and a pint of water, okay? And thirdly, remove yourself from the location and the people you're around, because it's almost certain that you're actually suffering a headache because there isn't enough oxygen in the air, and the people that you're with are quite toxic, okay? And then the final thing to totally lift any headache is a good glass of Côte de Rhône. And I absolutely know, because I had a headache the other night and I got rid of it by drinking Côte de Rhône. So Côte de Rhône is medicinal. And if you're ever prescribed any kind of medicine whereby you can't also drink alcohol, you know, that's the litmus paper test. You know, you shouldn't be taking that. It's only a chemical pharmaceutical product. It has no place in nature, and you are a child of nature. So you want I mean, wine, you know, it's nature, isn't it? It's grape juice. And really, almost nothing but grape juice, actually. Well, a few ladybirds and the odd butterfly, you know, have probably gone into the mix, but there it is. And there's not much we can do about it now, is there? It's a shame, but they're all part of nature, just like you are. Whereas pharmaceutical products really aren't. If there's one thing they really are not, it's nature or natural or, you know, so don't have anything. I mean, someone offered me, because I mentioned my headache, they offered me aspirin. I personally wasn't aspiring to that, so I just said, no, thank you, I'll be fine, and went home, had a brisk walk, probably or maybe drank a smidgen of water, and then poured open the Côte d'Aron. Jolly good. That's just the medicine tip of the day. Someone, or if I can't remember who it was, Aristotle or Plato or someone said, let your medicine be your food. I mean, let your food be your medicine. And it was Plato who said, if you've got music, then everything else in your life is definitely going to come together. It's going to whole itself, you know, in a one, you know, component part. Well, I mean, you know, a whole, because you know, well, you know, the brain functions best through music, and of course, as we know, wine. I mean, really, and honestly, if you had nothing else in your life but wine and music, you'd be okay, you know. Although I've heard a lot of people talk about something they call love, but I'm not sure about that one. Right, here we go. Sorry I've taken so long, but I just wanted you to get. You know, to understand how emphatic I am about my wine choices, even if they're from the corner shop, even if they're very cheap. So I'm just what I'm doing right now is I'm pouring the Boulard Côte d'Aron that you can read all about or listen all about in my last article into the two glasses. Just see how it is a couple of days on, because again, any wine, no matter what its price point. If it's a good wine, it will stand up to a dinner party because most people haven't got a clue about wine, so they don't know what they're being offered. And it will also stand up to 2 to 3 and probably more days in the bottle, just sitting around at room temperature. I personally would never, never put a red wine in the fridge unless I deliberately wanted a wine cup with strawberries on a very hot July day. Outdoors. So in the round bottom glass, which costs £5, 5 times as much as the other one, I'm just getting absolutely wonderful fruitiness, you know. Blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, pomegranate, and quite a chunk of what I call forest mulch. It's that slightly wet day in a forest, you know, a beach forest. Not a forest on the beach, because obviously most beaches don't have forests. I mean beech. It's BEECH. It's a type of wood, you know. That's not to be confused with oak, which is something that some wines are, well, I mean most expensive wines are barreled in. These wines won't have seen any oak. They won't have seen the beech either, but they're very, very close to the beech at this moment. Although that's BEACH, which, as we can tell, is different. Not indifferent, but just different, you know. It's an absolutely perfectly fine wine, you know. Couple or so days after opening. I mean, it's, you know, it hasn't got that massive dynamite burst anymore, but it's sort of settled itself down to a pleasant middle age, you know, with the paunch and everything. I got my gym stuff out and did some sit-ups earlier. Marvellous. I'll get the weights out as well. I can't wait. Knock, knock, chin, chin. Right, and in the truncated glass, which was 5 times less expensive, I'm getting a little bit of road tarmac in June and a tiny bit of creosote as well, which again I personally find highly delectable. Now these are both crystal glasses, but they're both pretty much as thin or thick as one another, but they are very, very different shapes, and they both allow the wine to display very different nuances of flavour. Okay, so in this glass, I would say that this wine, which was absolutely superb a few days ago, whenever it was I opened it, it's a little bit rough around the edges now. It's not, I mean, it's a wine, perfectly good. It's not bad at all. It's certainly obviously not one of those cheap gunks from, you know, Australia or South Africa. It's clearly a good French wine and one that I like. But it's not giving me, you know, the massive impressiveness that it gave me a little bit ago. But it's been open a while, you know, probably 2 or 3 days. But in the other glass, the expensive glass, you know, because we expect more, don't we? From the expensive glass. Well, why the hell is it more expensive, apart from the fact that the blower blew more? You know, well, you know what I mean? It should jolly well give some value back. And it's jolly well giving value back. But, I mean, it would only be fair to then compare the cheaper Côte de Rhône 2 or 3 days later. But, there it is. Two absolutely perfectly acceptable, very decent Côte de Rhône, £5.30, £7.25, you know, and the further review that I did on the Morrison's Corner Shop Côte de Rhône Village, totally forgotten what the village was, but it began with S. And that was magnificent for £10.75. So sort of take your pick. £5.30, £7.25, £10.75. You've got wines that would not shame themselves or you at a dinner party, any dinner party, unless it was a dinner party of, you know, like the absolute foremost top wine gurus in the entire world. But even then, if you covered the label, you know, and perhaps presented it in a nice decanter, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they weren't pleasantly surprised, because here at last are two wines that are completely unpretentious and just display the best of what France is, because apart from wine and possibly cheese, what is France? You know, lavender.